17 seconds and counting. Guidance internal. 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9. We have ignition sequence start. Engines on. 5, 4, 3, 2.
You're listening to Cosmic Perspective. I'm Andy Poneros. Today's special guest is the veteran of Apollo 12 and Skylab 3, and is the fourth man to walk on the moon. Captain Alan Bean, welcome.
Glad to be with you, Andy. Looking forward to spending a little time talking.
Thanks so much for being on Cosmic Perspective today. It's quite an honor for me and our listeners. The first question I have for you is, your interests as a youth, what were your interests?
Well, as long as I can remember back, probably about 10 or something like that, I wanted to be an airplane pilot. And I think that was just because during that period, it was World War II, and I watched John Wayne and other people in the movies flying airplanes, and I thought, boy, that looks like a lot of fun. That's what I want to do. And so for some reason, I held on to that dream as I grew up. It never left me. That even though I hadn't even flown in an airplane, I still had that dream, and it's made all the difference in my life to hold on to the dream. Whoever your listeners are, they need to hold on to whatever dream they've got.
Yes. And so the transition from wanting to be a pilot to becoming an astronaut, I'm sure, you know, growing up there was no such thing as being an astronaut, but what made you decide to become an astronaut?
Well, I can remember the day. I didn't really think about being an astronaut. I was a test pilot in the Navy, flying the latest airplanes, and I thought I had the best job in the world. I was thoroughly enjoying it, and every day I looked forward to flying, and I just was as happy as I could be. I was achieving my boyhood dream, and I went into the ready room one day, and people were over looking at the TV set. And I said, "What are you guys doing?" They said, "Well, a guy named Al Shepard is getting ready. He's an astronaut. He's getting ready to ride on this rocket going up into space and landing. He won't go into orbit. John Glenn will do that later." But I kind of watched. Wasn't all that interested, and as I watched, in 15 minutes, that guy, Al Shepard, had gone higher than I'd ever gone, faster than I'd ever gone, and he made a lot more noise doing it. And I thought, you know, that looks like more fun than I'm having. I wonder where astronauts come from. And so I looked into it, and sure enough, Al Shepard had been a test pilot the same place I was, 4 or 5 years ahead of me. So I was accidentally in the pipeline, and so it just looked like an extension of what I was doing. And I went through the selection program for the second group. That was a group that selected Pete Conrad and others, and I wasn't selected. So I came home and tried to get more qualified, continued to be a Navy pilot, and then when this third selection came up, I applied again and was selected. So it was a case of achieving more than I ever imagined as a boy.
It appeared to be a perfect fit for you.
It did, because I just turned to, you know, I never thought when I went away to fly in the Navy that I was going to make my life in the Navy and the like. I thought maybe I'd fly and then I'd come and be an engineer somewhere. Who knows what I would do? I couldn't think that far ahead, but when I began flying, I liked it. I liked the life. I was good at it. And I just, you know, I just kept saying, I don't want to leave here and go do anything else. And along came the space program. I sure didn't want to leave the space program and to go do anything else. And then after I came back from Skylab and was thinking about, I was training to be a shuttle commander, and I liked that a lot, and I thought, you know, maybe I could learn to paint well enough so that I could paint some of these things I've seen when I was on the moon and become the first artist in all of history that ever went anywhere but this earth. And so that I left NASA to tell the stories that I knew about Apollo, to paint the images of the earth from space and things like that that no other artist can do. Someday there will be many artists that can do it, but right now I'm it.
Yes, that is very true. Apollo 12 was your first flight, your first space flight. What was it like to lift off on the most powerful rocket ever made by man, the Saturn V rocket?
Well, I'll tell you, because it was the first flight, it was extra exciting, although I think for Pete Conrad, the commander, and Dick Morton, the command module pilot, they were kind of excited about it, too, because like you pointed out, it's the biggest rocket, it's the biggest machine, the most powerful machine ever built by humans, and it flew. And so I was wondering how it would work, but I couldn't think about that. I had to think about my particular job during that time. I think astronauts are not afraid that the rocket's going to blow up or they're going to get killed or anything. I think astronauts tend to be concerned that they'll be able to perform like they should if the chips are down. And we got hit by lightning, and our crew was able to solve that problem. We performed like we were trained to perform, and so it felt real good. But as far as the launch itself, we were so concentrating on trying to solve that lightning strike problem that probably I missed a lot of the experiences of being on the launch.
Yes, and I recall that Mission Control, when you were hit by lightning, they gave you, I believe it was SCE AUX was the switch for you to hit.
Yes, it was. It was an obscure switch, and I don't think we'd ever used that switch in training all those years. We backed up Apollo 9. We didn't use it there, and we used it, well, that was the one time we used it on Apollo 12. So we found the switch and threw it. The hero of that launch was Pete Conrad because he had to make a decision whether to abort. He was getting indications that we were going off course, but he was also getting a seat-of-the-pants feeling that we weren't, and so he held on and did not abort, and we went into orbit and got everything going after that. It worked out fine.
I've read that Pete Conrad was so happy after knowing where the SCE to AUX switch was that he kind of chuckled most of the way to the moon saying SCE to AUX. Is that true?
Well, I haven't heard that, but he is a happy guy. That was one of the most memorable parts of the mission, and my favorite part was flying to the moon with my two best friends, Pete Conrad and Dick Gordon. And Pete's motto was, if you can't be good, be colorful. He was good and colorful. So he set the tone. We were happy. We were excited about getting the chance to represent the country and do this exploration, and it was great. It was a great adventure, and a lot of it had to do with just being with Pete and Dick.
When you're headed to the moon on the LEM, on the lunar module, Pete Conrad was the person who controlled it, and I understand that he did something kind of special for you. He let you take the controls for a while.
Well, he did that. Now, as we made the landing, he didn't do that, where there wasn't enough time and the like. But when we, after we lifted off a day and a half later and started heading up to Dick Gordon, who was orbiting in the command module, he looked over at me. I was busy using the backup computer and filling out the backup charts so that we had a way to, if we lost contact with Earth, Mission Control, we had a way to compare solutions for the, our burns with the primary computer, which Pete was running, and then the backup computer, which I was, and then the charts. We had three votes, and we could see if one of them was wrong. Well, we could pick the other two. So I was busy doing that, as I'd done in all the training we'd done over the years. And Pete says to me, Alan, you're working too hard. You need to relax a little bit and look out the window. He says, why don't you, we've got good communications with Houston. Our primary computer is working great. Why don't you just quit working on those backup charts and the backup computer and just look out the window. Dick Gordon is a bright light up there. We're going to make it. Well, I was shocked. He never told me that in training, but he's the boss, so I started looking out the window and was enjoying the view, and he said, how would you like to fly this thing? I thought, wow, I'd like to fly just to see what it flies like. So he said, go ahead. So we called up the computer program that measured velocity in all directions, and the idea was I'd fly it a little bit, and then we'd use that computer and put all those registers back to zero, and we'd be right on course again. That was the idea. And so I started to take it, and I said to Pete, you know, Mission Control isn't going to like this because they're going to see me. They won't know who's doing it, but they'll see, you know, we're maneuvering around up here for no reason. They're going to wonder what's going on. He said, don't worry about it. We're on the backside of the moon. They'll never know. Well, shows kind of leader he was and how thoughtful he was. So I flew the limb a little bit, enjoyed it. And the interesting thing to me is when we got back and I told all the other astronauts about it, not a single other commander let his lunar module pilot fly the lunar module. So I show you the kind of leadership that Pete had, the kind of guy he was. I've always felt blessed since, you know, those years thinking how lucky I was to be on a team with he and Dick. So that's one of my thoughts that I have almost every single day.
A very special moments, yes, for sure. What's it like to walk on the moon, and what's it feel like as you're on the surface?
Well, first of all, it's not a lot different when you look around than it was when we trained on these volcanic fields, because the moon is a big volcanic area. It's got a lot more dust on it, and it's got craters around, but the color gray and the absence of anything other than the lunar surface is the same. The sky is black, no clouds, sun is much brighter, but in general, that was not what I would call very science fiction. I flew on Skylab for a couple months, 59 days, went EVA a couple times, well, one time, as I remember, and that was very science fiction. It was very science fiction to be outside of a spaceship, and there's no wind up there, Koss, no atmosphere, so you're not blown off. What it seemed to me, if your listeners, next time they fly on a 757 or whatever they fly on, imagine if they could open the door and go out on the wing and just crawl along. They wouldn't be blown off, of course, and they really would be, but imagine if they wouldn't. They could crawl down near the front. They could peer over and look in the window and see the pilots there flying. They could crawl back to the tail and stand on the top of the tail and feel like they were on the top of the world. So that was very science fiction. The training that we had to walk on the moon made it seemed familiar. We were light, 1/6 weight, so I felt stronger than I'd ever felt during training. But all in all, it was a familiar but wonderful experience. I think many people will want to go up to the moon on vacation as the centuries unfold and experience the 1/6 G, experience throwing things farther than any NFL player could ever even kick a football. It's just a lot of fun to be there. But, of course, we had work to do, so in general, we were concentrating on doing that.
And you landed in the Ocean of Storms, I believe, and you collected lunar samples, did experiments, and brought those samples back to the Earth.
Well, we did that, and the reason they sent us to the Ocean of Storms was a unmanned Surveyor spacecraft had landed there some 33 months earlier, and they wanted us to go over and cut off some pieces, for example, the television camera, because inside that camera were components that had been in space longer than anything else we ever had, and they had optics, gears, lubrication, wires, insulation, you name it. Bring that back, and then scientists could see what the effect of the lunar environment was for that long a time. So we did go to the Ocean of Storms. Mission Control, who are the people that can that give you the information to put in your computer so that you actually land where you should, they were very accurate, and if we had not touched the controls, the lunar module would have landed exactly where we had programmed it to land, which was in the middle of Surveyor Crater. So Mission Control was amazing in the accuracy that they were able to compute on just the second mission that actually made a landing on the moon.
That is amazing to go a quarter of a million miles and be ready to land in the same spot that you predicted you'd land there.
Yes,
for sure.
We were amazed too, but it just shows, and of course Mission Control then did that for all the other missions too. They know what they're doing down there. Thank goodness for Mission Control.
Your personal feelings and reflections of going to the moon and coming back safely to the Earth, you feel something that has become a part of you?
Well, yes, it has, no doubt. I've already explained it. The most fun part, or the part that I remember the most, was being with Pete and Dick and as a team actually making a very difficult mission work. It's not easy to do this. NASA made it look easy, but it's not easy. And I don't know, it's to change my life to a degree of how other people see me. It didn't change me so much. I've always been a self-contained person. I'm pretty much of an introvert. And art was my hobby, and, that's why I said earlier that, you know, if I could learn to paint better, maybe I could record some of these adventures that Pete and I had on the moon, but also some that the other crews had to tell some stories that might be lost forever. It would have been wonderful if Columbus had an artist along on one of his three ships, or maybe an artist with Magellan. We could have seen how Magellan got killed over in the Philippines. We could have, you know, of course we have television and photographs now, which were very important in Apollo, but artists can bring some other elements to celebrating one of the great explorations of all time. So that's what I spend all my time doing now. I was painting earlier this morning. I'm working on some Earths that are as beautiful as I believe Earth can be painted from space. So, I don't know, I'm trying to leave a legacy of stories and adventures and paintings of, for example, there's no good picture of Neil Armstrong on the moon. I've done a number of him that I hope will, as the centuries unfold, people will look back and say, well, That's how Neil looked in his space suit, and things like that. And this is a story that I haven't read anywhere else, but Al Bean is telling it with his art. So that's what I do now.
I believe you have a website that people can go to look at it?
Two. I have alanbean.com. It's Alan Bean, that's eight letters, A-L-A-N-B-E-A-N.com, and alanbeangallery.com.
Captain Bean, thank you so much for generously giving your time for today's interview, and thanks for sharing those wonderful experiences. And also thank you very much for being a part of making this American dream of landing on the moon a reality and helping
You're welcome, Andy. I feel blessed every day that I had the chance. It's one of the great moments in American history, great moments in world history. It will live as a great adventure long after all of us are gone, because it was an impossible dream that humans, just like you and me and all your listeners, were dedicated enough to work together to make come true. So I'm glad to have been with you today, and I wish your listeners all the best in their future.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with astronaut Captain Alan Bean, one of only 12 men to walk on the surface of the moon.